Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
Don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
We are back. Thank you for joining us once again.
Yes, here we are. Another week into the season, and it was a pretty excited week. This is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. I am Samuel Ball.
I am Adam Nelson. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. How are you feeling, Mr. Paul? You tired?
I am a little bit tired.
But you're not as tired as the Brewers right now.
No, but I imagine they're still feeling pretty good anyway.
Well, yeah, that's true. If you win the game,
it's a doubleheader.
It's an unscheduled doubleheader.
Yeah. It's a lot easier to get a good night's sleep when you win those type of games.
That is true. Of course, we're referring to the 18-inning marathon last night.
Yeah, this is the second 18-inning game this season, and it was the longest game in Miller Park history.
Really?
Opened in 2001. They haven't had a game go that long.
Time-wise or inning-wise, or both?
I believe both, but definitely inning-wise.
Interesting. Do you know what the longest game in MLB history is? Just off the top of your head.
It was something like a 23-inning
endeavor. No.
Endeavor, something in Boston.
Longer than that. Boston, though, yes.
It was Boston. Yes. Okay, well, I got the city right. But
right, but not the Red Sox.
It was the Boston Braves, was it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. How long did that game go?
Against the Brooklyn Robins, 1920. Went 26 innings. And from what I could tell, it could have gone longer, but they had to call it due to darkness. Of course, this is before night games.
Right.
The weird thing, though, is that it was only 3 hours and 50 minutes.
How about 26 innings, you say?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
1-1.
Well, I guess when you don't have TV timeouts and long between inning breaks,
true,
the game can go a lot faster.
Pulling out.
What was the final score of this marathon of a
1-1.
Game? 1-1. Well, see, there you go. No one's hitting the ball.
Right. Yeah. It's Brooklyn's run came off leadoff man Ivy Olson, and Boston's Tony Burkle drove in the tying run in the sixth inning. So then there's about 20 more innings after that.
Wow.
But hey, if they're zipping by that fast, I mean, you know, as long as they keep serving beer after the seventh, that would be an
issue.
Right. Well,
I think this was before the time where drunk driving was really a problem.
Yeah, it was legal back then. You're right. In fact, it was probably encouraged, seeing as how you're... Oh, no. Verlander.
That looks like a fair ball.
All right. Now I'm being distracted. But yeah, that is a fair ball. Okay, back to Monterrey, Mexico right now. We got the final game of the Astros against the Angels are at home, I guess. And I always feel bad for the teams that have to play internationally and then burn a couple of home games. You know, you would think that they would just switch off 1-1, but I guess that's not really how it works. Yeah, Justin Verlander starting the game. Thought he's going to do okay, considering, you know, Angels aren't doing so hot. It looks like he just gave up a first-inning leadoff home run right now. So.
It does. They're reviewing the play, and they're going to reverse the call.
Yeah, I don't like that. I'm starting him in my fantasy today, and I'm very upset.
Yeah, well, he's still got a chance for a quality start.
Look,
this is only the third pitch of the game.
But it's already 1-0. I mean, the whole thing is, like, if he gives up a run, I want it to be to Albert Pujols. Albert Pujols currently is sitting on 1999 RBIs right now. And so that's two more that I can allow.
Yeah,
still get the quality
solo
start,
home run last night. Oh, happy Cinco de Mayo, by the way.
Oh, yeah, and happy belated Cinco de Cuatro also yesterday.
I think the official greeting is May the 4th be with you.
Yeah, I prefer Cinco de Cuatro, okay. But it's okay. It's all right. Some fans know what I'm talking about out there. It's okay. Yeah, 1999. Yeah, Albert Pujols did it with fashion. Got the a home run, which was probably really the only bright spot for the Angels in that entire game. But that does bring him up to one away from 2000. He went 2-for-4, and he had a chance to hit the 2000 mark with two on and one out in the seventh, but he did something that he does more than anybody else. Yeah.
He hit into that double play.
So he hits more home runs and RBIs than most, and he also hits into more double plays than most. Hey, you know, what are your thoughts on this Mexico game? Because, I mean, I guess Mexico isn't too far from Anaheim and Houston.
Or Houston.
Yeah, same thing. No, it's not that bad.
It's not that bad. No, you know, I think ultimately it's good to spread the game internationally, give international fans a chance to see Major League Baseball and really the best players in the world. I think going down to Mexico, like Puerto Rico, like last year, I think is a lot easier on these teams than, say, Japan or Australia.
Yeah, definitely.
Until, you know, we get supersonic flight again, and it's not a 20-hour, 10 to 20-hour haul to get to some of these places across the Pacific. You know, the games in around the Caribbean countries are a lot easier to deal with than but you know, as far as the teams losing the gate money, I don't think it makes that much a difference in that grand scheme of things.
Yeah. No, and if anything, especially with Mexico, it's going to create new fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it used to be, you know.
Yeah, and maybe talk further future expansion into Mexico City or other places in Mexico.
Right. There's going to be a lot more Angels hats in Mexico after today. Houston as well. In fact, when I was in Japan, that's funny. Funnily enough, the hats I saw the most were actually Dodger hats. Dodgers are everywhere. I saw Dodger hats in Colombia, Japan. Like, they're all over. But I'd say the second most not Seattle, but A's, actually. I saw more A's hats.
Really?
Yeah. And I think it's because they were just there, you know, a few weeks before that. But I always assumed, you know, because of Ichiro, that the Mariners jerseys and hats would be the most prominent. But nope, still Dodgers. And I might have saw one or two Yankees, but that makes sense. But a lot of Dodger hats in Japan. But, you know, I guess it makes sense. They're the closest, more or less, to Japan, I guess. I don't know. Geographically speaking, I don't know.
Geographically speaking, maybe. But also, there's I believe that the Dodgers have a deal in Korea and Japan to televise games.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's why a lot of the Dominican players and everybody liked the Yankees, because that's the only game that they could listen to.
That's why there are so many Yankees fans across the country, because for many, many, many years, the only games that were televised were Yankees games.
That makes
sense. So, yeah. You know, it was the Yankees against whoever they happened to be playing. So people rooted for the Yankees because, well, Mickey Mantle.
Right. And it does help also. I think there's a lot of Mexican fans that are Dodger fans because of Fernando Valenzuela.
Sure.
And it stands to reason that Hideo Nomo did a lot for the sport in Japan as well.
Right.
For the Dodgers.
So, absolutely.
In fact, I have a Giants fan friend of mine that says that he wants to be a Dodger fan, but he can't because he lives here. And he's Mexican. But he said he will be a Dodger fan tomorrow if and when they retire Fernando's jersey. So I'm all on board for that. I think they should. I mean,
yeah, I don't see any reason why they should. He was a great pitcher. I remember watching him pitch. It was
pretty
really
spectacular.
Good for a lot of years.
Easily one of the greatest rookie seasons for a pitcher, possibly of all time.
Absolutely.
Reinvented the screwball. I mean, you know, he was just dynamic.
And also had a very memorable, unusual windup, looking
staring
straight
up
to the heavens before he delivered the ball. It was pretty remarkable how he was able to recover, find his target, and throw that quickly.
Right. And like every time. And so you hear it here first, Dodgers. Retire Fernando's jersey, and you'll get like 30% more fans, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, out of and a lot of out of a rival marketplace as well.
Right, exactly.
Not me. This is, right. I'm not Mexican. Don't pretend to be. But I do know who of which you speak. And
yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that
there's a lot of blue love up here already, though. It was evident in the game that I went to on Monday. A sea of blue.
There's Giants tickets are definitely easy to get.
That's true.
These days, and there are a lot of people up from Southern California because Silicon Valley and all the tech companies, and it's a very easy move from Southern California to Northern California.
Right.
Certainly easier than most places in the country, anyway.
100%. Now, I do have some bad news, of course, that the curse is back, and I do apologize to all the Dodger fans.
This is bad news how?
I thought I was reprieved. The last series, we went to a game at the end of last year, and the Dodgers won. It was the first game I'd seen the Dodgers win at Oracle AT&T. Yeah.
But I was there with you, so that's probably
right.
That kind of...
But your friend was with us as well, and he said that he had a curse. And so I think his bad juju outweighed mine. But
that's
with him not being
too.
There, him not being present on Monday... Of course, the Dodgers were winning most of the game, and then one swing of the bat, the Giants took the lead, and I went home.
Right, a little bit
depressed,
yeah.
as usual. But I don't know why I'm surprised. It's all right though.
The next game, I think they made up for it, but you weren't able to go to that one.
Right. If you're a Giants fan and you want the Giants to win, send me your tickets. I'll go. And I probably won't go. I'm not going to lie. I don't really want to go to those games. It's okay. I'd like to go to Oakland games, but. Dodgers don't really play in Oakland. Only like once every 5 years. Anyway, all right. Well, we're riding off the rails a little bit here.
Yeah, we are. We went off a little bit of tangent. We were talking about Miller Park. There was a 6-hit game. Ryan Braun had a heck of a game that game.
Yeah.
Became just the fifth Brewer to get six hits in a game.
Real.
Yeah. Last year, of course, Christian Yelich did it on August 29th. But before that, it had been 2013 when Gene Segura did it.
Oh, that's right.
And then before that, it had been 20 years since a Brewer did that. That was Kevin Remier did it in 93. And then before that, it had... been another 20 years. In 1973, cat named John Briggs.
Interesting. Now, Ryan Braun has virtually every Milwaukee hitting record, as far as I know, right? I mean, or almost. I think he's, like, really close to...
Well, there's a guy named Paul Molitor.
Sure.
But he never got six hits in a game, apparently. At least not for the Brewers.
Right. No, but I just mean, like, career records. I think he's... Oh, I don't know. I could be wrong. He's definitely like in the top five for like home because I mean he's played there his whole career.
No, I know in general that, how you feel about Ryan Braun.
Yeah, I don't like the guy.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
No. He stole an MVP from Matt Kemp after he was knowingly juicing, lied about it, then got caught, and they still he still gets to keep the MVP. I'm sorry, no. You get suspended for something that you and by the way, Kemp still should have won. He was leading the baseball in RBIs that year, average. He almost got the Triple Crown. He was one home run away from Ryan Braun, and Ryan Braun somehow gets MVP. Ryan Braun's a terrible defender. Matt Kemp, MVP. Matt Kemp, beast mode. I'm not... Now I'm getting all riled up. That was a bad year. Yeah, so Ryan Braun, I know you're a California kid, but you know what? Why don't you stay in Milwaukee?
I think he's planning on it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's fine. I mean, it was like a little single up the middle. You walk off hit in the 18th inning. I don't have much to say about Ryan Braun, but I was going to put this guy in the ignoble category, but I think I'll keep him out just because I kind of liked Jesus Aguilar. But he's having a tough start.
Yeah.
You know, he hit 35 home runs for the Brewers last year, but this year... he didn't hit any home runs until the 30th game of the season. Now, this is an ignoble 30-30 club, right? So
an ignoble 30-30 award, huh?
Right. Batter who hit 30 or more home runs the year before and then took 30 or more games to hit his first the following year. Now, there's some decent names on here, but there's also some very forgettable names. Now, the record is 52 games after the previous year. Earl Averill in 1933 hit 32 home runs. So Jesus finally got one. You know, he's sticking in that lineup, but it's a glaring hole there, and I feel bad for a lot of the fantasy owners because he was going pretty high or pretty late in the draft, and I remember thinking that's interesting. This guy was MVP, you know, caliber last year. He almost took the Brewers along with the actual MVP to a pennant. Of course, they didn't get it, but and it's a really slow start. It took him 30 games. Again, he's not alone. Don Mattingly did it in 88. He hit 30 home runs, and then he took 32 games to hit his first. So, you know, it's not horrible company, but it's not really a 30-30 club that you want to be in.
No, that is definitely dubious. Don Mattingly, did you capture that audio from him this past week?
That was great.
A great little exchange with an umpire. We should make that a regular feature. We can find some audio of arguments.
It's hard, man. It's not easy to find good audio because MLB doesn't like to release the human moments in baseball, which
is a mistake.
Is the game within the game. I mean, you want to appeal to a younger generation. Put a red band. Audio channel on a game, you know, have that option because there's microphones on the field, but they always cut out of it. You know, the audio.
why even have the microphones there if you're not going to use it?
I know, just for like the 1 20-second clip of somebody talking that they'll refer to 3 years from now. I don't know. I want to hear the conversations at first base between the runner and the defensive, you know. I want to hear all that stuff.
And what do they talk about on the mound? Do they really talk about that candlesticks make a nice wedding gift and we'll see what we can do about that live chicken?
I think so. And I, for one, would like to hear that. Now, you know, look, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, and I have many ideas on how to appeal to a younger generation, which I don't think they should be pandering to, but nevertheless, I get it. I mean, you know, 18 to 35, that's the money demographic across the board. Okay, it makes sense, and that's generally people who watch a lot of baseball, although I think it's actually over 35. But you want to appeal to the younger generation, have more rock and jock kind of things. You know, remember MTV, rock and jock? And we talked about this before, but give me a catcher cam.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me the catcher cam. I don't even need...
Or an umpire cam.
Umpire cam. There you go. Because, I don't want anything on the catcher to obstruct him. It doesn't even have to be... But just the camera right behind there? I mean, come on.
I mean, camera, it doesn't even have to be that restrictive. The size of the cameras these days...
Put a GoPro.
You mount one right on top of the thing. A little small little...
HD.
Camera on top of the catcher's head. It'd be so awesome.
Exactly. I mean, it doesn't have to be every play.
It's not going to be heavy...
You won't even know it's there. Huh. Yeah, exactly. And again, just those angles alone would make it so much more exciting. Because when you see the same angle from behind the pitcher every time, and then it cuts to behind, you know, it's the same every single time. And I think that has more to do with interest in the sport, in my opinion, than does sort of pace of play or restricting a pitcher to 30 seconds. I mean,
get us as close to the game. I mean, the building surge of the new ballparks was the idea was to get the fans as close to the game as possible.
Right.
And this was one of the really nice things about sitting down low at AT&T Oracle Park.
Right.
Is you really are really close to the action there, and it's really nice. But when you're watching it on TV, there's some good angles, some interesting angles, but I'd love to see close in. The catcher cam, the few shots that I have of the umpire view is outstanding.
Exactly. The umpire is still. He doesn't move. So it would make for great video. And, again, like not even just for hits, but it is cool to see a home run from the catcher's view. You just watch the ball sail and disappear. But I would also like to see a big 12-6 swooping curveball. It would be pretty cool to see what the batter sees, essentially. It really,
yeah.
I mean, the audio thing maybe people don't want to get embarrassed. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. Again, put a red band, you know, a disclaimer. Have it be like an optional audio, even just for those of us who have the subscription for out of market. It doesn't have to be on national TV. I get that. There's, you know, profanity and all kinds of stuff. But make it an opt-in service, you know.
Right.
You want to charge me, you know, $5 a month? I'll pay that. Look at this. Free money for MLB right now. I know I'm not alone. Yeah. I know I'm not. Are you kidding me?
I would do that too. It'd be so much fun to hear the chatter, hear the casual conversations, the arguments.
Yeah.
Love to hear what's being said.
That's the game.
It's gold. I mean, that audio, if you have not seen this, this video came out earlier this week of Don Mattingly arguing with an umpire after being ejected from the game, probably from the dugout.
He was in the dugout and he got ejected.
Right. He came out and was just laying into the umpire, who, to his credit, really wasn't reacting. Another umpire came down to kind of stand in the way, just make sure that it didn't escalate too much. But, there was a lot of profanities being thrown out there.
Oh, yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. I will say it wasn't even nearly as bad as like Earl Weaver, like we had last time.
Oh, but it was pretty close. I mean, it's like, you know.
No, it was great. I mean, look, it was a bad call. Jeff Nelson. It was a terrible call, and it was definitely ball four. It was way under the strike zone. He calls a strike, and I think it was Jorge Alfaro who was already like halfway to first base. He assumed it was a walk, and then nope. And then you hear Mattingly, you know, chirping from the dugout. He gets tossed, and then he comes out, gives him hell. Yeah. It's kind of one of those things. You're only here for one reason only. But again, that, you know. The occasional manager outburst, like that's a part of the game that, you know, casual viewers and or new viewers of Major League Baseball might not even know about. This is kind of what we were talking about last time, you know.
And all the highlights, all the highlight reels, you watch the highlight programs, they'll show the video of these arguments.
Right.
But they never have any audio.
I know.
I mean,
in a
family program, I get it.
Sure.
But let's have a premium channel. Let's have an option, you know, to be able to hear some of that stuff. I want to hear that stuff. You want to hear some of that stuff.
Oh, my God. You create a whole new generation of fans, not unlike like Brockmire or something. You know, people need things that. You could put on like a 20-second clip on YouTube, and that brings people to the sport.
And that keeps them interested. And that was this argument with Mattingly. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Don't worry about those two runs that you just cost us.
All right, now so we obviously didn't talk about Vladdy Guerrero last week, but he has been now a Major League Baseball player for a full week.
A full week.
Finally got his first RBI.
First Major League RBI came last night.
Now, you know, there was so much anticipation last Friday that the Blue Jays opened the gates early so that his loving fans could watch him take BP. Now, this seemed like a good idea at the time, right? But the very first swing, according to some insider knowledge, he broke a pane of plexiglass in the flight deck, a standing room only area in the fifth deck in deep left center field. And then on the next swing, he bloodied a fan's nose. Another fifth
Folks,
deck rocket.
Bring your glove to the game, especially if you're there early for batting practice.
It hit a woman in the face in the fifth deck. I think you think you're safe. Over there, but
well, you might be, but I mean, oh my God, that is impressive.
Yeah, so
this is at the Rogers Center too. That's a pretty big ballpark too. So. Yeah,
so we have yet to see him hit a home run in a game that counts, but it was pretty funny. You know, they on his first game, they batted him fifth, right? And when they asked Montoya. Why are you batting him fourth today? He's like, well, he hit fifth yesterday. I think he kind of had to just put him fifth. He couldn't just give him cleanup his very first game. I mean, the kid's 19, right? But it's pretty funny. There are only three other active players who were asked to bat cleanup in either their first or second big league games. Rhys Hoskins, Chris Bryant, and Jose Abreu. And I'm pretty sure all those guys are all-stars right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, they're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
An interesting little piece of trivia, small worldness regarding Guerrero's first major league RBI. The runner who scored on that play was Justin Smoak.
Okay.
Nearly a decade ago, 9 years ago and a few days on the April 27th of 2010, Justin Smoak hit his first major league RBI. And the runner who scored was Vladimir Guerrero Sr.
Wow.
So that was
baseball.
That is a really nice little symmetry.
That's
in there. That's how it goes. That was pretty cool.
That's how it goes, right? Now, it's funny. Speaking of father son duos, you know, this Jason Stark of The Athletic decided to take it upon himself to figure out the question, what's the most total poundage? For any father-son duo in baseball history. Now,
what, is he fat-shaming baseball players now?
No, look, now this is a very, very difficult stat to find, obviously, because, well, for one, most players lie about their weight, and for two, you can't really run a computer program on this. But he did do some research, and I applaud you, sir. Who do you think's number one? What duo? When I tell you, you're going to be like, oh, yeah.
The fielders.
There you go. Yeah. that wasn't too hard. Cecil at 230 pounds and Prince. And now, again, Cecil was probably 230 when he first started. But
yeah.
And Prince at 275.
Wow.
For a total of 505 pounds. Now, they're the only 500-pound club. there is a 485-pound
pound club. Pound for pound, the best.
Yeah, we can start doing pound for pounds now in baseball. But Vladdy and Vladdy Jr. are combined 485 pounds. So they're pretty close. And again, we'll see what happens at the... But, you know, Vlad Sr. stayed pretty lean pretty much his whole career. But
yeah, he was in good shape. But yeah, he's a big guy. Yeah, I mean, big people are big people. You don't have to be out of shape to weigh near 300 pounds. But just ask any NFL lineman. I mean, a lot of those these days are just totally ripped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a actually American heavyweight, Jarrell Miller, big baby Miller. He's Verlander. Come on. All right. I'm getting distracted over here. I just need. All right. So now I can't let Pujols get an RBI now because it'll destroy Verlander's quality start. So hopefully Verlander goes six, gives up three, 10 Ks, and get the hell out of the game. Ah, man. I want to see Pujols get 2,000 today. This is a very distracted episode because there's a game on. I mean, there's usually a game on, but usually it's just I'm getting killed or something. And I figured I was safe with Verlander today against the Angels, who have been struggling. But nope, he's given off homers to the catcher, apparently. This isn't
Jonathan Lucroy. Yeah, apparently guys are seeing the ball really well in Mexico here.
It's a nice overcast day. It's pretty good. Now, there was a newest member since last time we spoke. In the 3,000 strikeout club. Speaking of big boys.
Right.
You got CC Sabathia racked up his 3,000th strikeout this week. So who did he strike out for number 3,000? That would be John Ryan Murphy, who caught Sabathia in 14 starts for the 13 through 15 Yankees and was actually his catcher for strikeout number 2,500 in 2015, which is interesting. But it gets better. There are 17 pitchers in the 3,000 strikeout club.
Really?
How many of them recorded number 3,000 against a guy who had caught them for even one of the previous 2,999? Of course, that would be none.
Yeah, I was going to say, there couldn't have been too many. I mean, that's pretty interesting.
Yes, sir. So then when Elvis Luciano got the credit for the win in the Blue Jays' 11-inning comeback triumph over the A's last Sunday, we finally had ourselves the first winning pitcher ever for a pitcher born in the 2000s. So he's the first.
Right.
So what does that have to do with CeCe? Well, he was the first pitcher born in the 80s to win a game, according to the Elias Sports Bureau. So that's pretty interesting. I didn't realize that. But now we are going to be seeing guys winning games who were born in the 2000s. Can you believe that? I guess we're getting old. On a side note, whenever we're talking about old guys, you got to throw a little Bartolo Colon in there. Bartolo won 36 games in the big leagues before Luciano was even born. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're missing Bartolo Colon. He's not on with the team at this point, is he?
He's Barting it up somewhere, I'm sure. But that brings us to an interesting conversation, which is, what is the more impressive feat? 3,000 strikeouts or 3,000 hits?
That's a great question. I know we were talking a little bit about this the other day, but there are more three people in the 3,000 hit club,
right?
Than 17.
Right. There are how many are there? So yeah, there's 17 for strikeouts. And then there are 32 3,000 hit clubs. So pretty much double, almost.
Almost double. Both are very...
very difficult to achieve.
Very, very impressive feats. There's no doubt about that. I would say that... I want to say just because... if there's only been 32 people in the to get 3,000 hits in the history of baseball, they say that hitting a round ball with a round bat
is
the hardest thing to do in sports. I would have to give it to the hitters,
right?
In the 3,000 hit club, because they're out there every day, and they have to play a long time to reach 3,000 hits, since most don't get more than 200 hits in a season. That's a lot of seasons.
Right. Most do not.
You have to be playing at a high level for a long time to get 3,000 hits.
Right.
I would say,
and just like 3,000 strikeouts, you have to be doing it for a long time as well.
Right, but you're only doing it four or five days.
Right.
Depending on what era that you got your 3,000 strikeouts. So I would say more impressive 3,000 hits.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a little bit more difficult. So only 32 out of countless hitters hitting every single day.
Yeah.
Whereas,
it's tough.
Yeah.
It's not easy when you really break down the numbers. You have to be averaging 200 at least for half of your career, right? Essentially.
And besides that, it says in our intro, strikeouts are boring. And besides that, they're fascist.
That's right. But we did see Strasburg get his 1,500th this week as well. Yeah. So he's halfway there.
And he became the fastest pitcher to reach that milestone.
That's right.
He's not the youngest, just the fastest to reach it.
Passing Chris Sale. And right. I think by a good amount, too. Yeah, was nuts. I mean, he slowed down a lot. I mean, he was injured for, a better part of two and a half seasons. But,
right, imagine if he wasn't injured, how far along he'd be nipping at CC's heels already.
Super dominant. Well, very dominant. Always kind of a risk for fantasy. I've never won with him, and he's tough because he's not going to start every game. He's not even going to start every fifth day. I mean... He might go 160 innings, maybe, but for the most part, it's tough. But, it is very impressive when you consider that, and you consider how injury-prone he has been, that he can even get to that mark this quickly.
Well, now you bring up an interesting thought for me when you said that it's a risk for fantasy. I've been looking the last few days to see if there's any possible... roster moves I can make in my fantasy team for pitchers. I was looking at the list of available players, and there's some interesting choices, and looking where I need improvement. If I want to improve my K per nine or total strikeouts, I lose
Counting stats.
Well, I look at, you know, the pitchers that are available who have high K per nine and high strikeout totals, but they also have
higher ERAs, higher whips. Right.
And it's like, so how do you evaluate mid-season what would be a good pickup for a pitcher versus maybe one that might not be as good? How do you weigh what you need versus what you'll lose to net gain and have a good pickup?
Well, my friend, is the magical dance that is fantasy baseball.
Well,
and that,
I get that, but I mean, well, as long as we're on the air, we might make some for good some radio, but
we have to get.
Yeah, it all starts with the draft. And your team, just for starters, you have zero relief pitchers. I saw you just picked one up. You finally got your first save. In May, you got your first save.
Yeah, it was Rob Stripling.
Against
the Giants.
Oh, that was a hold.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So in this league, now we should clarify. In our league, it is not 5x5 roto.
No,
that's pedestrian.
It's 10x10. And it's quite complex.
Roto,
yeah.
Every day. No days off. And it's the truest test, in my opinion, of a fantasy brain. Now, we eschewed saves for a couple years. We got rid of saves because it undervalued every other reliever, right?
Right.
But then,
and there's only so many closers.
Yes. But then we had to supplant it with a different stat that wasn't very popular. So what we did was we found middle ground, and now we do saves / holds. Now, this obviously still keeps the top relievers as top relievers. It still keeps them in high demand because to get saves, it's a much... Generally, you're going to have much better luck with actual closers getting saves than you will with a guy who occasionally gets holds. But it still does make for valuable setup men and eighth inning specialists like Josh Hader,
which also allows for more flexibility and more choice.
Exactly.
When it comes to availability.
Now
your team
though, you didn't draft any relievers, which is really interesting. I thought you had to, but what I realized is you do have to draft two starters, two relievers, then you could do however many,
right,
whatever combo you want, but your two relievers
are also
basically starters
pitchers.
Yeah,
right.
They're basically starters who were relief eligible, so you kind of shot yourself in the foot there.
Well,
so you
did,
almost might as well not even try to.
No, I didn't
saves.
Do it. I had to work during our draft. So
no.
It was all Yahoo's doing.
Excuses are like assholes. You know, everybody's got one. It's all right. You could have called in sick that day. All right. Anyway.
Not
actually,
my
you could
position.
Because then you were going on like a 3-week trip like a week later. I know. Nevertheless, it's your team is your team. You can't blame Yahoo. And by the way,
I don't blame
leading in home runs. Like your team isn't bad.
I'm not blaming Yahoo. I'm overall happy with my draft that I did get, but I'm saying that drafting all starting pitchers was not my choice.
Well,
it
okay, and so we
Yahoo.
Don't do wins. We don't do wins, but we do quality starts.
Right.
And to my knowledge, you are actually leading in quality starts.
I am.
Right.
And I picked up another three yesterday, which was really nice.
So your K per nine is going to be lower, but because you don't have a lot of relievers. But your strikeout total will be higher. So you might get the counting stat. You might not, because you're going to have so many innings from all your starters that your ratios aren't going to be as good. But your counting stats will be. So,
right.
But it's going to be tough because, again, we do 10 stats for pitching.
Yeah.
So you could just kind of go for broke. It's kind of like me with steals. You know, in a 5x5 league, steals are important. 10x10, meh. You know, I mean, it's so I can generally forget about that one if I can get slugging, if I can get total bases, if I can get RBIs. Because generally guys that have a high slugging aren't really going to be stealing any bases. So you kind of have to... You kind of have to wait like that. Like, I'm dead last in steals right now. But I'm third place overall, kind of, barely. You know, I don't know. It's tough. It's so early in the season. But what you... I don't know. I feel like it's too late for you to even try to catch up with saves. So maybe just keep piling on those quality starts and rack up those counting stats. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we're only just over a month into the season, so there's a lot of baseball left to be played, and guys get hurt, and guys get hot, and they fade, and you know who knows what will happen come, you know, even June.
Yeah.
But I know I was just looking at the stats and trying to figure out what a good balance would be, where I don't want to lose out. Is there a way to lower my whip? Is there a way to increase the number of strikeouts without increasing the innings?
Relievers are going to help your K per nine, because they're only in their one inning, and a lot of times they get, you know, 2-3 Ks, and that's 27 right there. Now it's only one inning, but the ratio is going to be nice,
But then it's finding those relievers, and who do I drop to get there, or do I try to?
You drop your weakest starter,
right?
Guys that only go five innings, and which is a lot of guys nowadays. I mean, if you have more than four pitchers that consistently go six or more innings, you're going to do very well,
right?
But there's no way most of those guys are going six consistently.
Maybe I can figure out a way to do a trade too. But
yeah, there you go. But again, I mean, you are pretty far behind. But I see what you're saying. You could still mitigate the
I can get some of those points.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. You're definitely not going to lead. But yeah, you could balance it out a bit.
If I'm, say, fifth in saves as opposed to last in saves.
Right, it's five extra points. And that's points that other people aren't getting. So, yeah, right. Exactly. No, yeah, it's, well, you know, again.
And like I said, I did have a good day in fantasy yesterday and jumped from sixth to fourth. I don't know, something's working. Yeah. But it's just finding a good balance. It's a difficult.
Yeah, well, it's tough. Look, all the best relievers are gone, just like all the best stolen base guys are gone, you know. But, you know, it's trade. You already got one trade done this year, so you can probably do it again. Now, speaking of saves, Andrew Miller gets his first save. Now, he finished off a game in a way that's only been done once in the last 20 years for his first save of the year, Tuesday, against the Nationals. That is with a Victor Robles pop-up to the pitcher. Now, Retro Sheet founder Dave Smith reports that over the last 20 seasons, only one other save has ended on a P1. That was the 4th of July, 2016, when Adam Jones popped up to Kenley Jansen. Yeah. I guess it's very, very rare, you know. It's kind of like when Joey Votto pops up to first base. It's only happened once ever. Yeah.
But I think starting in high school, most pitchers are discouraged from fielding pop-ups.
Yeah.
They tell the pitchers to let a corner infielder take that.
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily why. Maybe because coming off the mound you can trip. But it seems like if there's something in the middle of the field, that it should be the pitcher's. It should be easier for the pitcher to field that than.
Well, when you think about it, you're in front of the mound at that point because you've already landed in the grass, and so the mound is behind you. That's got to be pretty awkward. Whereas the corner infielders or second base is coming in to the mound, so it's a lot easier for them to negotiate the higher elevation, I would imagine. Plus, they've been staring at the sky. They've been, you know, staring at things other than the catcher's mitt the entire game. So that it would make sense that, you know, the reliever is focused and he's not, you know, you don't really want the pitcher staring off into space trying to find a ball. So it kind of makes sense. Plus, again, you don't want him to trip or anything like that. So, but yeah, really kind of interesting. Andrew Miller, wow, man, he's been not the Andrew Miller of old, that's for sure. But it's nice to see him get his first save. You know, it's just one of those things. And I mean, obviously, it's not nearly as tragic as Corey Kluber. That's pretty tough, man. Speaking of fantasy purposes, I mean, that's rough because Corey Kluber almost always has a slow start. Almost always. I mean, I've had him a couple of years, and he's won me a couple championships. But he almost always has a really slow start, and then he picks it up. And so for the people who own him, they're like, okay, all right, you know, get the slow start, Corey. It's fine. And he wasn't doing that bad. He was doing pretty okay. But then, oh, man, the comebacker gets a fractured arm, and that's tough. That's tough. It's pretty brutal. He's probably going to be out for the rest of the season, it looks like. I mean, you know, even if he can come back, why would they bring him back? unless the Indians even have some kind of shot. But this is kind of what we talked about before the season even started, looking at the Indians lineup and seeing how they were still favored by like 8 or 9 games to win the Central. I mean, I know it's a weak division, but I mean, geez, they are not the same team. Francisco Lindor didn't even play like her whole first month. And Ramirez is just not doing what obviously fantasy owners thought, or you know, the entire city of Cleveland was hoping and expecting from a real MVP caliber guy. Now they got Clevinger out probably for the season. Kluber's gone. I mean, Carrasco's right in the ship, but I mean, that's a big burden to carry when the Twins the best team in baseball essentially right now. They have the highest winning percentage.
The highest winning percentage, they're right up there. They have the Twins have been playing some very good baseball. I know they had a bad game, I guess on the fourth against the third against the Yankees, but on the fourth. They actually won their first game in New York since the 2016 season.
Really?
Yeah. So that bodes well for the Twinks going forward. But
the Twinks?
The Twinks. The Twins. Yeah.
The San Francisco Twinks.
The Minnesota Twinks.
Called the Giants from now on. The Twins broke their franchise record for highest slugging average in a month. Their 493 slugging mark leads the majors by a wide margin and is 19% better than league average. Twins ranked 23rd in the majors last season in home runs. This year, despite playing in one of the least homer-friendly parks in the league, they rank 4th, you know, behind young guys. You know, guys like Kepler, Rosario, 25-year-old shortstop Jorge Polanco. He's batting .327, slugging .606. All of a sudden, the slugging catcher Mitch Garver is hitting .333 right now, slugging .729. He's 28. Got 27-year-old sort of super utility La Tortuga, right? Williams Astudio, whatever, I don't know, people call him. But he's batting .327. Now, he's on the IL. But still, I mean, he's a super utility guy. He can catch. He can play outfield. And then, of course, Nelson Cruz, you know.
Yeah, no, they've been hitting the cover off the ball. In fact, last weekend, which was the last weekend in April, the Twins had 12 home runs against the Orioles.
Yeah.
They broke their franchise record for a number of home runs in a 3-game series.
Padding that slugging stat right there, right. Definitely.
And what's interesting about is that the franchise record of 11 was established the weekend previous against the Orioles.
All right, Cleveland is officially on notice. The Central seems up for grabs.
It does.
Now, it's funny. Corey Kluber, so far, well, I mean, he's not going to be missing anymore, but he so far has issued the most bases-loaded walks in baseball this year with 4.
Really?
Now, how many bases-loaded walks do you think he has doled out over his first 8 seasons of his career over 5,000 batters? How many?
I wouldn't have the slightest clue of where to even start. Zero?
Zero. He never done it before this year. Wow. And then he did it 4 times so far.
So law of averages catching up to him?
It's slow Kluber. Kluber always starts off slow. There was the 1 year now. It's, I think it was 2015. I want to say, maybe it's 2016. I had Kluber and he got off to an 0-5 start. You know, his ERA was like in the fives or something. You know, it was tough. He wasn't even getting quality starts because he was giving up 4 runs a game, and I was getting really demoralized. And I still remember this clear as day. I was going to go into a movie. It was like a Sunday afternoon. And I was like, you know what? I'm sorry, Kluber. I'm going to bench you today. I benched him, right? Mm. I benched him. And then I felt bad. I was like, I was sitting down watching the trailers. I was like, crap. So I got up, you know, because I don't turn my phone on in a movie theater like an asshole.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I got up, went to, you know, just outside, and the game started. I was like, ah, shit. You know, because I felt bad. I was like, I can't keep him on my bench. He's my number one. I mean, I know he's doing terribly, but. You know, so I couldn't put him back on, right? He was still on my bench. Sit down in the movie, come out. What does he do? Oh, yeah, that was the 18 strikeout game that he got, the complete game shutout. 18 Ks, complete game, obviously, you know, completely, like, lowered his ERA by like a point and a half. Like, it was insane. Sure. 18 strikeouts, and I missed it, and I was a wreck, man. I mean, it completely ruined the movie. I was with my girlfriend. It was the worst day.
Do you remember the movie?
Oh, God. No, man. The whole day. I remember the movie wasn't even that bad, but I hated that movie. I liked that movie. Now I don't even remember what it was, but dude, that was brutal. Yeah. That was like that. Well, no, that, I was like, oh, I'm going to lose. Like, I'm going to lose. Like, you can't miss an 18 strikeout complete game shutout and still win. Now, I did end up winning that year, so that kind of, you know, took the pain off a little bit, but I still am mad at myself about that. Don't sleep on Corey Kluber. Now, again, the rest of the year, this year, you can. And sorry, Cleet out there. I know he's crying somewhere into a bowl of cereal right now. But it's tough, man. I think it's funny. I was just telling him. I was like, nah, this is what Kluber always does. He always starts off slow. Just have faith. And I was thinking about, maybe I'll trade for Kluber because he was really down on him. Now I'm glad I did it. But.
Right.
Anyway, that's fantasy, man. You know, you can't get too down on any one day, especially in Roto. Can always turn it around, but it is pretty tough, man. It is pretty tough when something like that happens. Now, Wednesday in New York, Michael Lorenzen saved a 1-0 win for the Reds. But it was Thursday when he did something no other active reliever has done ever. And that is he stole a base as a pinch runner in the same series in which he racked up a save. And to find the last pitcher to save a game and steal a base in the same series, you have
to go back a ways.
All the way back to 1988, which isn't too far. But okay. When Gene Nelson with the Oakland A's reeled off a July 2nd save and a July 3rd base stealing in a series against Toronto. Now, the last pitcher to steal a base in the same game he got a save, that would be Mark Davis for the Padres, 1988 as well. Pretty amazing.
Mark Davis. I remember Mark Davis.
Was that the guy who has the video where he's mimicking the umpires?
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good video. Put that on the Facebook today.
Yeah. I will.
Embed that link. That's that really brings you back to old school baseball and kind of...
the relationship that there used to be between the umpires and the players. And, you know, it was also... back when there was a distinction between National League and American League umpires.
True.
That there are two distinct groups. And
are they sort of switching it up? Or the umpire?
No, there's only Major League umpires, and everyone calls both leagues.
Yeah, that makes sense.
At any given day.
But yeah, it seemed a lot more personal. And for all I know, it's still going on to this day, especially when you're a reliever and you have a lot of time to watch the game and, you know, you're studying the umpires. And
right.
I'm sure they all have their own quirks. And this is another thing why, this is another reason why I wish they were mic'd up. I wish there was more attention on what's actually happening in between the plays, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, most baseball fans know that the appeal of the game is what's happening when there is very little actual baseball happening.
Right.
There's the between the plays, between pitches, there are, you know, the subtle things, guys being moved to different positions in the field, signals being flashed, you know, comments being made in the dugouts and the bullpens.
Yeah.
You know, guys making fun of each other, yelling obscenities around, I'm sure, and pranks being pulled. I mean, who knows? There's always something going on, you know, whether or not you're looking or not when it happens is another thing. But this day and age when there's a camera everywhere except, you know, on the catcher's helmet or the umpire's face mask.
I'm happy with that. That has to happen at some point. And or release the audio.
Release the audio.
For the love of God. That's all I ask. That's all I ask. I actually ask a lot more, but it's okay. Red Sox, wow, man. They are pretty terrible so far this year. But They scored 9 runs in 1 inning. And the craziest thing against the White Sox yesterday. The craziest thing is that they did it all with 2 outs.
Yeah.
2 outs. They came into the game hitting .242 with 2 outs on the season. And had scored at least 9 runs in a game twice. And they did it all against Chicago starter Manny Banuelos. The 9-run frame marked the first time a White Sox starter had allowed 9 or more runs in an inning since Arnie Munoz did it back in 04 versus the Expos. But 10 consecutive Red Sox batters recorded a hit during the third inning, in which 14 men came to the plate. All 9 position players that started recorded at least 1 hit and scored at least 1 run in the third inning. How crazy is that?
That's pretty fantastic.
Pretty unreal. Now, the record, according to the Elias Sports Bureau, is 12 straight hits done by the St. Louis Cardinals in 1920 against the Brooklyn Robins. Brooklyn Robins are coming into play a lot this this episode.
Yeah, no wonder they changed the name to the Dodgers.
Do a little quick. Well, it's better than the Bridegrooms.
Well, perhaps because then you'll never be the bride, right? But
no, I don't want to be the bride. I didn't say bridesmaid.
Oh well. Okay.
Some quick injury updates. Blake Treinen's dealing with some right elbow soreness. He's feeling better. At least that was a quote. And they said hopefully it's more just like a little tendonitis than something more serious. But that also means that the setup man and one of my favorite names in relief baseball, Lou Trevino, will be coming in. Not to be confused with Lee Trevino, who is my favorite golfer. But
everyone's favorite golfer.
So swoop him up if you're in. If you have a little extra spot in your lineup, get Lou Trevino in there. He looks like he'll be getting the saves duties until Treinen gets back. And then Chris Davis. Earlier today, I was watching this game, and man, he made a catch in foul territory, but he crashed into the side railing right by the stands, and he was grimacing a lot. It looked like he maybe broke his rib or something, but he stayed in the game until that inning ended. He came out, and then he didn't come back in after that. But I guess they're saying it's a left hip contusion, even though it looked like he hit him like in the right side. I don't know. Some misinformation going on there, but keep an eye on that.
Broken rib is a painful injury.
I mean, it looked like that. That's not what they're saying, but I mean, if you watch the clip, I mean, he slams right into it.
I have to find it.
You know, it looks like it's padded, but I'm sure when you're running into it, it's
padding only pads steel. So much.
Yeah,
you run full speed into a padded steel beam, still hurts like a steel beam.
Yeah, exactly. I saw Pat Venditti pitching for the Giants yesterday. Also, the switch pitcher.
I
thought he was still floating out there, but
no, the Giants had picked him up the off season.
Now, he gave up a home run, but it is kind of cool. I like to see that guy somewhere in the game. He was an A, then he was a Dodger, now he's a Giant.
Following around Zahidi, I
guess
think.
He's going to Padres next. Or I think you're right. I think he has the same opinion. He's just like, this guy's too cool not to have on the team. Like, it's a pretty cool deal. Now, if they let him switch mid at bat, that would be pretty hardcore.
Yeah, but that would be
an advantage.
Talk about throwing off a pitcher's timing, or a batter's timing.
I think they should let him. I mean, it's so rare. The whole problem would be against a switch hitter. I remember some like America's Funniest Videos decades ago, and it was some high school game, and switch pitcher, switch batter, and one would switch, he would take off his batting glove, put it the other one on, he walked to the other side of the plate, then the catcher, then the pitcher would take off the glove, put it on the other side, and they just kept dancing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So when I think about that rule, I think about that clip, and I'm assuming that's why they have to
Maybe so. I mean, the circumstance is very rare, but, you know, it's still maybe in an exhibition game they can allow for that to happen.
Yeah. But again, I mean, somebody's going to have to yield though at that point, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, at a certain point, umpire's going to say, "Okay, guys, come on, play ball. Pick a side."
Yeah, but who wins?
Pick a side. Doesn't matter.
The batter should win because the pitcher has the advantage. So I think the batter should win. But and I guess that's the whole point. That's why they don't let the pitcher do it mid at bat. Or even I think mid inning. I don't think they let him do it. Do they?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't.
Maybe
know.
They do.
I don't know.
Maybe they do. Actually, I think they do mid inning, but not mid at bat. Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, because again, yeah, the pitcher still has, and this is again why I think the 3,000 hit club is more, not more important, but
more impressive.
More impressive than the 3,000 K, because again, the pitcher always knows what's coming. You know, the batter does not. So yeah. That's a pretty impressive thing. And the Dodgers today just signed Travis d'Arnaud to a 1-year deal, sending Matt Beattie to AAA. So backup catcher, it's always good, I guess. Now, d'Arnaud, the Mets released him on Friday after previously DFAing him. They tendered a $3.515 million contract before the season, but he's been struggling pretty bad to start after he got Tommy John surgery last April. So, you know, maybe the Dodgers see something Mets don't. Maybe he's just getting off to a slow start, but he had some pretty decent stretches with the Mets, and I can't say he ever had like a solid season because he was hurt a lot. But that's, you know, some news. Not a lot of news going on today, but yeah, man. I mean, hey, backup catcher. I saw a Giants backup catcher get a home run the other day as well. So
right.
Oh man,
of the game.
Yeah, that Jesus Christ, that eight inning. That eight run deficit,
eight run comeback. The Giants were down 8-0 in the third inning.
Yeah, and you didn't even watch the game because
I listened to the first part. Well, I'm based on what the Giants have been doing at the plate at the place, right? Which is scoring runs. I figured they're not going to come back. Maybe they'll score a few runs, but. I didn't bother to turn it on after I got out of the car and went to dinner at a friend's house, and you know, wasn't paying attention. Looked at my phone later on that night, and the Giants won 12-11 in 11 innings. What? I missed that game.
Outrageous.
It was ultimately a historic comeback win, as it turns out. Just the fifth time since 1883 that the Giants have managed to overcome an 8-0 deficit to win.
Wow.
Yeah, previous time was in September of 1989 against the Cincinnati Reds.
That's baseball.
Interestingly enough, every time that it's happened, the Giants have been on the road. They did it twice in 1970, once against Atlanta and once against the Dodgers.
Jesus.
And then only once in the New York era in 1947 against Pittsburgh.
Maybe they are the Twinks. They like coming in behind, huh? All right, that was a little... No, sorry. And that brings us to our Ignoble Award of the Week. All right. I'm sorry. That would have to go to Chris Sale. I'm sorry,
Chris Sale.
Sorry, buddy. I mean, I know he finally did get his first win. But Chris Sale was the opening day starter for the World Series champion Boston Red Sox, going 0-5 to start the season. Now,
it's rough.
Now, it's not just that he went 0-5. That he gets this award. It's okay. That he is the first opening day starter for any defending champ to go 0-5 to start the season.
Really?
Never been done.
Wow.
So, you know, kind of got to give it to him for that. Even, you know, kicking him while he's down. But, hey, he had a solid start his last start. He got the win. He had like 10 Ks.
I think Boston's slow start is have anything to do with World Series hangover?
Possibly. But it's... You know, also probably because their ace starting pitcher is terrible and they don't have a closer. So, you know, there's that. But I don't know. Their bats aren't, you know, JD Martinez isn't, I mean, he's still hitting like over 320, but he's not like unconscious. He only has like 7 home runs or something. Mookie Betts, same thing. A little bit of a slow start. I don't know. I mean, World Series hangover, probably. But when your starter, when your ace, when your the Cy Young Award winner is, well, not last year, but, you know, is throwing his fastball in the low 90s. That's, you know, high 80s when he was throwing it in the high 90s, you know, just a season ago.
Right.
Now, we all know Chris Sale is fragile. He's basically made out of toothpicks. But when by the time mid-August comes around, he is breaking down. And so this was the first time he went that whole series away, all the way through October, through the first pitch in that World Series, through the last pitch in that World Series. Right. So
right.
He worked a lot.
He did.
So I think it's less hangover, more fatigue, possibly. Oh. But if I was a Red Sox fan, I'd be pretty worried. Because, again, the first five starts, you only get first six starts, only gets one win. And now, again, that's also because their offense hasn't been that good. But if you expect him to dominate the first half and then maybe slow down the second half when he is starting the first half slow, that's got to be worrisome for the Boston fans, especially when yeah. the Rays are doing so good. And the Yankees are winning with their B squad. So, I mean.
Right, which is even worse for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And speaking of the defending champs, you realize that two championship trophies were damaged while
by one Gronk
by in possession of the Red Sox anyway. We had the incident during the World Series parade where a fan threw a beer up to the trolley where they were holding the trophy.
It's a hell of a shot. Trophy. By the way, that's a great shot. That's a great shot.
It is. And then apparently New England Patriots tight end Gronkowski.
Former Patriot, yes.
Bringing the Lombardi Trophy to Fenway Park, attempted a bunt with said Lombardi Trophy and
got the bunt.
Dented
he
it.
Got the bunt.
He dented the trophy in the process. Two championship trophies in one calendar year.
Me, Gronk, want to play baseball. He got the first thing that was slightly round and elongated.
Oh, my God.
Very. I mean, you know, if somebody's going to do it, I guess have it be a guy who also won for that town, too. But
yeah, but still.
That's almost too bad for an Ig Nobel Award. So, yeah, you're off the hook.
Girl. Runner up.
All right. Yeah. oh, Jesus. All righty. That brings us to last week's trivia question.
Last week's trivia question.
Now this is a pretty well. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see how the people do. Let me see. Last week's trivia question. Remind me.
Well, I didn't believe that you posed a question this
last week's trivia question. Who led his league in RBIs in 2014 whilst batting second, batting in the two hole? Aaron C. in Placerville says Giancarlo Stanton. Interesting. Close, but Stanton was second to Agon with the Dodgers that year. Stanton had 105. Agon had 116. You remember that? That was a hell of a year for Adrian Gonzalez. Michelle W. in Anaheim says, come on, guys. That's way too easy. It's, of course, Trout.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding. You know what that was?
We have a winner.
We have a winner.
We have a winner.
We have a winner. Michelle... go ahead and email us, and we'll send you out that T-shirt. Or if you're in the San Francisco area, you can come to this sweaty, hot-boxed studio that we call the Baseball Podcast Studio. I don't know. Yeah, we don't have a name. The Falcons Lair. How about that?
The Falcons.
Yeah, so ding, ding, ding. I don't have any ding, ding, ding sound effects, but
we should get
some
one.
Prices,
we
right?
We should get one if people start getting these trivia questions. we need to have a winner sound, for sure.
You know what? That was too easy, Michelle. But hey...
Congratulations.
First. Yeah, she's the first one to get it right, so there we go. We got a winner. I mean, you know, it's sometimes I feel like they're easy if you know, right?
Right, well, obviously, it's always easy if you know.
But some of them are a bit maybe esoteric or out there. But you have this week's trivia question. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. What do you have for me this week?
Well, so... this is what I was looking at. So everyone knows that Coors Field in Colorado and Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona, are the two highest stadiums in terms of elevation.
And now Colorado, literally and figuratively.
Yes, this is true. but in terms of elevation, we're talking about here in this case. But that begs the question: what is the third highest?
Huh.
stadium in terms of elevation.
Interesting.
And Major League Baseball.
Muy interesante.
Yeah, now, I have some ideas,
but
this will test your knowledge of baseball and U.S. geography.
Interesting. Okay. All right. That's tough because I'm assuming it drops off pretty.
It drops off pretty dramatically from Coors to Chase
Coors,
Field.
Coors, yeah. It's about 4,000 feet, probably.
Coors.
Okay. All right. No more hints. All right. I got you. I don't know. All right. I'm gonna need a week to think about this. And so will you. So leave the answer at Podomatic website, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com.
Facebook, West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast.
However you find us, iTunes, let us know.
Give us your answer, and you'll get a T-shirt, much like Michelle, and definitely an invitation to come and talk baseballs with us one of these weeks.
Yeah, there's a winning streak going, so let's
keep it going.
Let's hope Albert Pujols gets his 2000th RBI, not against Justin Verlander tonight. That'd be nice. From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.